Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to Books Boys, live from the Grand Library, the Dean and EJ.
He's PJ.
Hello there.
I'm the Dean, and we are the Books Boys.
The one and only.
This unique is the Books Boys Best show. Get it? Buy it? Books.
Books.
Now, you threw me off there, because last time I cut you off, and I missed the one and only. And this time I waited, but then you said more things that I cut you off again. So we need to redo. We need to go to a lesson on intros.
I think we need to get that right there, but I was distracted by my herbal nettle tea that I'm drinking here. Are you into the old nettles, Dean? All right.
Yeah, I love to rub my face on them on the sidewalk in Krakow.
Well, this is what we do, guys. Dean, just to give a bit of background information, I'm very big into my nettles, and I like to eat them raw, make ice cream out of it, all kinds of things. But I believe this is not a show about nettles, is it? I think it's a show about books.
It's Nettley Boys, the show.
I did realize, Dean, I don't think books are in the toilet paper roll section. I think those are actually used for something else.
Oh, so my goodness.
So I went to look for them in trees, right?
Because okay, they're good, made good.
Out of... Those books are made out of wood, right? I mean, pages...
I think so.
I was looking for, you know, like in the scene of As You Like It, I was looking for a bit of classic romance poetry in the trees there.
Sure.
I didn't really get. I think it was different alphabets. I didn't really get. I'm afraid my language.
You didn't find anything.
I'm afraid not. So very disappointed. So I'm still looking for them. I thought there might be some Homer there, or
But they're made of wood. So I have something in my house. Actually, my laptop is sitting on it right now, and it's a kind of square object that balances on legs. Is that books?
It's a complete works of Shakespeare, probably.
Hmm.
Everyone
it could well be.
Computer works of Shakespeare, I believe. Anyway, guys, if you have any more insight as to what books actually are, please let us know.
That's it. Booksboys@hotmail.com. Guys, it's episode 23, and next month is going to be the end of 2 years.
Good Lord. Is that right?
Yeah.
Was it not in 2 months?
Well, October is the anniversary, so it's like the start of the third year. So next month is like the end of season two, if you want to kind of put it like that, you know.
And me and Dean were talking. We had a relaxing summer. We didn't do so much in the old Patreon front. But there's a lot of promotes, and we bring a lot of Patreon extras. So if you want to join for only $2.50 a month, or euros, or whatever the currency is.
There's a song about this, which we're gonna play in a few moments, I think.
Indeed.
But so let's. We did do some stuff on Patreon. We did one play.
Indeed.
Which was Playboys Extra, In the Shadow of the Glen.
Out of the Glen, a one act Irish play. Highly recommend it.
And. Robert, Dark Place Robert from the Garth Marenghi's Dark Place show. We've decided to do another series. So this time, instead of picking a show no one's ever heard of, we've picked the new Sandman show on Netflix, because it's also about dreams and dark places. And Dark Place Dreamers is back, and we've got 4 episodes recorded, but we've only released 2 of them. So that's already lying out.
The Sandman. Well, I haven't seen it, but I do like it's based on Neil Gaiman's comics, right?
Yeah, I was sad about that, and that's really holding me back from enjoying it fully.
So Neil Gaiman is an excellent author, and I've recommended I think Coraline already on the show, and he's a I really recommend you read one of his books. They're really interesting philosophical fantasy books. Now I think that's his one big comic, but he's more of a novelist, actually, more of a novelist. Coraline is a perfect kind of children's book, but it's very creepy and it's got adult themes. It's Alice in Wonderland-esque, but I think you'd
Okay.
enjoy it.
Well, it's an interesting swerve because last time I picked a crazy shoe that I thought Robert would find crazy and showed it to him and got his reaction. This time he's making me watch a comic shoe that I wouldn't normally like and getting my reaction. So we flipped the script.
Right. So if you want to hear Dean's reactions, and yeah, that would be very interesting.
That's on
But sure, it's very
patreon.com
interesting.
slash booksboys.
Yeah, get it.
Shall we play? Have you got your piano ready there, PJ? I've got a something. Let's see what we can do.
Let's have a look what we can play in the old piano.
Hope you tell everybody that Books Boys got an extra 100 episodes or more on Patreon. It only costs €3 to hear us every day for a month. And you'll never be lonely because you always hear voices and you'll always hear about Dickens, Balzac, and Tolstoy method.
Woo!
And I hope that you don't mind that I wrote this little song for you, because we created an episode just for you. Come on, Dean. I hope
Hope
you
you
don't
don't
mind.
mind.
I
I
hope
hope
you
you
don't
don't
mind that
mind.
we put down in
Woo,
words
baby!
how wonderful Playboys is on Patreon.
For $3, £2.50, or something similar in
In the
euros.
European
Get it,
zone.
buy it, book. Hey, not bad. How did I do those harmonies live, improvised, you know? Amazing.
It's quite incredible. Yeah, Mozart, yeah, I know. It's indeed. Wow.
Very
Brilliant.
good. That was
So you have
you can hear the full version of that actually on one on the Shadow of the Glen episode. PJ, you went for 5 minutes, I think, so you know it's all there.
Nice, nice, nice. Yeah, exactly. So there is an extended version if that wasn't enough for you kids. And this time we aren't interrupted by the sound of angry students in a library, or crickets, or sheep, but by me sipping delicious nettle tea. So for some reason, I'm going on about the nettle tea. But should we move on, Dean, and talk about
Move on from the nettle tea
liberal
because I read a
literature?
lot of flipping books, so I better talk about some of these books,
You
actually.
haven't either. You've warned me already, so I'm ready.
So
So get ready for some hot stuff.
the first thing I read, and I think I promised or at least hinted that I would read this, El fin de los escribas. So it's the final part of the Glenn, almost like Glenn Miller, the jazz man, of the Glenn Cooper series. Now, we did say that there was a little short story to read in between, but I just couldn't find it. Like we said that these are hard to find, you know, in English especially, but I
Yeah.
couldn't find the story even in Spanish. This is quite a
Well,
short book. It's
if any one of our readers can find it, please send it to us and get in contact. Say hi.
called a library card, I think. If you have it, please, booksboys@hotmail.com, send it to me, tell me where to find it, something like that.
Exactly.
So this is well, the end of the scribes, but actually the English title is The Keepers of the Library. So I don't know what's someone's translations need work, but
Indeed. And you've decided to read an English book in Spanish, which is a very interesting choice.
yeah, of course, just because I couldn't find it in English. But look, it's a
Oh,
short
okay.
book. It's less than 400 pages. It's a little paperback. I think it's very, very accessible. Okay. So what happens here is we're back with Will Piper, who's our main guy, and there's something I don't like. He's kind of doing a James Bond type thing. Like he's on a boat with like a bikini clad girl, and she like wants to sleep with him even though he's married, and there's this temptation. I kind of wish we could just lose that trope from like TV and books and stuff now, you know, the kind of sexy cop that get the cop that gets all the sexy younger girls. Like I don't really think we need that anymore, you know. The difference with this book and the last one is we do see a little bit more of Nancy, his wife, or at the very least, she comes across, I think, a little bit stronger, which is something that I liked. Okay. So this book doesn't feature really cool people like Shakespeare or Nostradamus, but we do have Benjamin Franklin.
Okay. It's a bit of a, I love that concept of mixing historical figures. That's a bit disappointing, but at least you have one.
We have Franklin, yeah. Now, what I do like about this one is, unlike the second one, it has a little bit more scenes set in the old times. You know, second book was mostly modern with just a few flashback scenes. This book mixes it up a little bit more, which is something that I really, really enjoyed, okay? Nice. So it's a few years later. We're getting close to that 2027 date that the world's going to end. Because the books, well, listen to last month's episode. I'm not going to repeat it. We've got enough to do. But
it's the end of the world.
The prediction is 2027. Or is it?
Ooh.
Ooh. So their son has grown up a little bit, and he gets a message from a girl saying, "You're Will Piper's son. You're the only person who can help me. Please come." And she lives in, like, Yorkshire, I think, like, in the middle of nowhere in England, in, like, a little farm kind of, you know. And they're in New York. So this son just disappears and flies over to help. And then the parents are really worried, you know, so they kind of get the FBI on it. We got to go find our son. And that's how the novel starts. The son goes to look for a girl calling herself Haven. And Will goes to find her, to find the son. And it's a weird community of little farmers and no one's really telling him anything. But this one family seem a little bit more educated than the others and is a little bit off-putting. And Will's given an MI5 girl to help him because they you know, the American government tell the British government, you know, to help. So they go in. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a spoiler because it happens very early on. Will gets kidnapped by this family as well, okay? And it turns out, this is the really interesting thing. What's in the basement of that house but more scribes?
All right, okay.
So then we have
in Yorkshire, in the middle of nowhere, New Yorkshire.
Yes. So then we have some flashbacks that show obviously how this came about. But right at the end of days, they all wrote that 2027 was the end. They didn't mean the end of the world. They just meant that was the end of their task. And after 500 years of writing, they stop. And the destiny shifts from Vectis and the Isle of Wight to Yorkshire. And this one of the scribes impregnated a girl on the very last day, and she leaves, and she gives birth to a new scribe, and they start a new system, a new library again.
Interesting, yeah.
And it goes, this one goes for longer. Actually, it's been going for 700 years in Yorkshire in this basement, but it's slower because they don't have as many of them. You know, they're not giving them village girls to reproduce with the way Vectris was doing in the 1300s or whatever. So this is a lot slower. And then it's weird because to avoid giving them other girls, the family are reproducing. So then there's a lot of like incest within the family.
Okay.
Because the family are reproducing with the scribes and then like with their own children as well to try to help this lineage. But they're really attached. Like, our family's been chosen to do this. This is our destiny. We've got to keep this prophecy alive. But again, they don't share it with anyone, you know, they just want to keep it. So then what happens? World War III almost breaks out because the Americans who own the previous books, because they took them from the Isle of Wight that Churchill gave them, they want the books. This time the Brits are like, nah, we think that was a mistake giving you all the control and taking them to Area 51. We're going to keep them this time. And then the Chinese come in and they say, we're the most populated nation. So like, if any nation should have it, it's us. And then, like, this fighting breaks out with, like, helicopters and explosions and everything in this little farm in Yorkshire. The CIA are there, and the Chinese are sending secret service types there, and MI5 are there, and it's crazy.
Wow, okay.
And Will tries to leak the story to his daughter's husband, who leaked the previous story for him. But this time, we don't know if he can be trusted again or not. So, sowing little seeds. But we have these really good ancient scenes as well. Well, not quite as ancient, but old scenes with Benjamin Franklin. Something for the youngs, you know. But they paint him as a good guy.
Okay. And is he relevant to the story, though? He's obviously
They find one book amongst all the library that's different, and it's his diary. And he visited both libraries, the original and the new one.
Okay.
And he helped one girl there. He's not super relevant. I don't think he really moves a lot in the story, but he does, you know, tie in with it.
But I do love that concept. That's what I get the most out of these books. They're mixing historical figures, and yeah. I always like that. Yeah.
Honestly, this is one of my favorite series of books. Now, I still say the original is the best because it's shocking, and you know, you don't expect what's happening, and the more it goes on, it's a bit more of the same. And there's the trope again, the woman who's running the farm also wants to sleep with Will, and it's like, okay, can we just drop this trope, you know?
Like, yeah.
Well, we don't need that, you know?
Even though he's got a great idea, it sounds like he does kind of just try to recycle the idea twice at least, right?
That's I think so. Okay.
If you got a great concept, you attempted to do that. Like Murakami's books do feel very similar. Well, not too similar, but they do seem similar enough from time to time, yeah. Interesting.
There's some nice bits as well, you know, in the end of Days and Vectors and how they're trying to, like, get the girls to, like, be impregnated by the monks. And it's really scary, and they take them to these weird, creepy rooms full of, like, skeletons of dead scribes and, like, you know, essentially raping them there. And it's some of the parts are really difficult to read, just with that whole kind of morality of it. Okay. But they think they're doing God's work because this is like prophecy from God that they're fulfilling. So they think this is the only way to do it, you know?
Right, okay.
And they rescue one girl, Clarissa. But there's also some scenes where Benjamin Franklin... Go ahead.
No, just saying, it does sound like throughout the system for kind of cults and like these new religions that especially appear in the US, right? It seems to be a thing. Like, yeah, it was the incest and all that stuff, yeah.
And there's another cult in England that actually Franklin joins, and what they do is they keep these young girls that they dress up as nuns, and they bring them in just to like serve them, you know. Read into that what you will. But although Franklin goes a few times, he's always depicted as not really partaking. He just wants to like have intellectual discussions with them when he's given one a girl, you know, and he comes across as a kind of good guy. And he has a little bit to help one girl. Probably not really a lot. You know, as I say, he's not a prime mover in the story, but he does a little bit, and he does come across, I think, as helpful. So, and then at the end, of course, it's, you know, is Nancy going to come and help? Because that's kind of what she does in the last book. So there's a lot going on here, scenes in the past and the present. This is an amazing book.
Without spoiling the ending, do you think it ends well, the series? Is it a fitting ending for a series, or were you a bit disappointed?
I think the family are fine, you know, but whether or not... I think it was a mistake to change it. I think leaving 2027 as the end was better. Because now we don't know if there's an end, because they wrote more books and maybe they'll continue. You know, once you do that once, you don't know if it's ever really the end. Whereas I like the idea of, well, we're in 2022 now. You know, I like the idea of readers like hosting parties. And like, oh my God, it's the 9th of February, 2027. Like, is this the day the world ends based on these fictional books and having this whole cult following, you know, and that's gone now with the third book, you know?
Okay. Maybe the whole point was he's criticizing cults, so maybe he's kind of saying, well, don't make a cult out of my book. I'm going to stop that now. But I know what you mean. It's tempting, the idea to celebrate a book. Like we saw with the book that we both read, Winterset Hollow, because I like the fact that in Winterset Hollow, they have a day where they celebrate it. And that could bring it into real life, that if you like this book, you also celebrate the Winterset, the day that they celebrate there.
Yeah,
so I do like the ideas that you celebrate certain books, certain days, like Bloomsday, whatever. So it's a pity they did that. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, but it's a good book. I recommend everyone find the first one at least, El Biblioteca de los Muertos, and try that.
In English, is it called just The Library of the Dead?
The Library of the Dead in English. Only the third one has a different title. I don't know why.
Right, okay. My Spanish do that sometimes, yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, well, it does sound very tempting, I have to say. It does sound like it's just a kind of book that I might like. A bit surreal. Is it a bit surreal, would you say? Even though it's also a thriller?
Yeah, it's very surreal. It's brilliant. So what I'm going to do next is we have a clip from a nice lady here called Alexandra C. That she sent us. I'm just going to play this. It's only about a minute.
Good evening, PJ. This is Alexandra C., author of the short novel Alexandra C., All the Lives We Haven't Lived. I've discovered your great bookstagram and literary podcast by chance, and I have enjoyed it very much since. As a Spanish national, I appreciate that you often discuss literature written in Spanish. And thanks to you, I have discovered some Spanish authors I had not read before. In my case, being Spanish, I have dared to write my first book in English, though, and I'm thrilled that you have taken the time to read it and extremely thankful that you will feature it in your podcast this month. More info on the novel can be found in my Instagram, Alexandra C. _writer. And well, I wish you a very nice podcast that I will be listening to as soon as it's available, as I always listen and follow your account, your great account. I wish everyone a great day. Muchísimas gracias. Buenos días.
Okay, so luckily little Alfred has gone and prepared some more tea for me.
Indeed. And I got myself some more nettle tea.
Good.
I just want to say thank you very much for the lovely message. We really appreciate that. And it's lovely to hear back from you guys. And Spanish literature is great. And I'm really looking forward to hearing more back from you. And just anyone can feel free to just write to us, send us a message.
Yeah, I always say email us, but you can just use Instagram or any of those. You know, we're on Twitter and TikTok. Well, I'm trying to avoid TikTok at the moment; it's quite toxic. But Instagram's the best one.
The voice message is lovely to hear as well. So thank you very much for your feedback, Alexandra.
Mm-hmm. And originally, she found us because she's from Santiago de Compostela, and I was doing some posts there. I was, you know, doing some photos there and reading there, and. Then she found the show and everything, and that's that. And I have here her little book, Alexandra C. by Alexandra C.
Well, that's great. I love the cover as well, Alexandra. And I love the fact that you're using English as your Spanish, but using English as a language, because, I mean, there's so many great authors who use their second or third language. Like Joseph Conrad comes to mind, whose third language is considered one of the best English-speaking authors. So, Alexandra C., so tell me about it, Dean.
Just to point out, I read an English book in Spanish, and now I read an English book by a Spanish author. So everyone's just mixing up everything, you know. But
I love to mix up things.
I really enjoyed this, and it is short. It's roughly 100 pages, maybe slightly less. So if you've got some free time, you know, you can read it in a day, you know, if you have the time. Yeah. Maybe 2 days, you know, if you're busy. It's not a big read. And so it's Alexandra C. by Alexandra C. So my first thought is, well, is it an autobiography? But no, it's not. It's fictionalized, or it's something. And the answer is, I don't know. And I try to ask, you know, is this fictional? Is this real? It's a mystery. You've got to read it and figure out for yourself.
Interesting. Okay. So I like the fact that you're also keeping it a mystery as well. That did you also asked Alessandra as well, right? And she didn't really say anything about that.
No, it's I've been told that we just need to read it and make our own interpretation. But I'll tell you one thing: if it's real, I'm very jealous of her lifestyle.
So, wow. Okay. Tell me about it.
So what happens initially? Well, the opening point is not something to be jealous about. A friend of hers passes away. Okay, her friend Ernesto. And it was a friend that, you know, she had met, but a lot of their friendship was also by like email correspondence and that kind of thing. So they kept in touch over the years, you know. And there's a lot of that. It seems like she's very good at keeping in touch with a lot of people. But this jet set lifestyle of just going here and there, and they're on like a kind of cruise ship at one point. She's flying to this country for work and that country for work, just having a great time and meeting a lot of guys along the way. And the story is about these different guys she meets. You know, at one point she meets this guy much younger than her. And this guy says, she's like, I'm old enough to be, you know, to be his mum. And her friend says, well, I don't think he's thinking that, by the way. He's looking at your ass. You know, he's not thinking of his mum.
Yeah.
And then she meets the guy anyway. But then she takes him on a holiday. They go away somewhere together. You know, like it's very jet setting. And then at the end of it
Okay.
all, you know, she
Oh,
sends him a message.
no, no,
No. I'm just being at the end of
no,
like
no.
his chapter. She sends him a message, you know, a few years later or whatever, and says Happy Christmas or Happy New Year or something like that. And so he sends her the message, and she says, "Who's this?" And he says, "Well, it's the young guy that you took away on holiday to make love to, you know." But I guess she does it so much that she's like, "Oh yeah, right, okay, one of them," you
Interesting.
And there's some. Well, I'm not going to swear on the show, so I'm going to use euphemisms, but there's a lot of the young guy, you know, made love to me in every corner of the apartment, and here's the under this picture of this celebrity and under this of that, you know, and it's it, but I love it. And we get to
Wow,
see the people who hang on her wall, the different pictures of men and women that hang up on her wall as well. But all
okay.
this is framed. And I'm reading this thinking, you know, this is such a fun person. She seems very sophisticated. And even speaking to her, she's a very glamorous, very lovely lady. Very, very glamorous lady. But I'm just reading this thinking, I want to live this lifestyle. Like, this is a lot of fun. This is great. But at the same time, there is this underlying, was Ernesto the one that she really loved all along? You know,
Right,
and maybe, and she, and as the book goes on, you start to kind of see that more and more, you know, maybe she missed out on that real opportunity. Or is she just thinking that because he's died and that's very in her mind at the moment and in her heart, you know? And so she wants to go meet up with another friend of Ernesto's to actually ask a little bit more about him, like in his lately in his day-to-day kind of life, you know?
So she's trying to figure out if she's romanticizing the Ernesto who's passed away, or if it was really the real thing. I get it. Yeah, realism versus romanticism, right? Yeah.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, this is interesting because it's like it even says on the back, this book is its own genre. And I kind of agree. Like, it doesn't really fit a genre. It's not memoir. It's not realist. It's not romanticist. It kind of blends things beautifully. And for her first book and for, you know, her first book and such a short book, it was very hard to put down. It was very well written. And
Nice.
I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm
Wow,
so glad
great.
that she got in touch. And that she's from
Yeah, that's
Santiago, a city that I was in just last month. So, well,
been
in
there a few
July.
times.
Yeah, I've been a lot of times. Yeah.
Oh, great. Nice.
There's a few funny bits in it as well, you know, and she kind of has some nicknames for some of the different guys. And sometimes she'll just stop and talk about music, and she was listening to some Frank Sinatra and things like that. But she talks about a few different guys that she met and compares them, and it seems like she lives a very jet setting and very free, you know, kind of lifestyle. And I loved it. So I recommend it if you can find this one, Alexander C by Alexander C, with this lovely cover. Brilliant. Thank you so much for getting in touch.
That's great. Yeah, well, thanks very much indeed, and for saying that book. And would love to have a read. Dean has it at the moment, but next time I see him, I'd love to have a read because that does
Course.
sound nice. And I like the fact that it's a great lifestyle, but there is an undercurrent, as always there is in life, of, you know, sadness as well, maybe. So something, thoughts about the past and maybe even regrets. Yeah,
Yeah.
she's had such a great life as well, which is very great, and I think that's the way it should maybe
I
live your
kind of
life.
see her now as this, you know, some stock photo of like a couple on the balcony in Paris with their wine and the girls in a nice dress. And that's kind of how I see her now, just from reading the book and from chatting to her a little bit. This very lavish kind of lifestyle, you know.
Lovely. Okay, that's great. Wow.
We're going to
So
hear
you.
something that you've read in a moment, but first, real quick, it's time to have a little message from this month's sponsor. And this month we're sponsored by the Society for Dialogue. So if you head over to the Society for Introducing Dialogue into Your Books.gov, you can find. So let's imagine this now. And it happens a lot, particularly in South America, PJ. It happens a lot that maybe you've written a book. Maybe you've written a book and you finish it and you think that's a good story, you know. Maybe there's three generations of the family in the book. I don't know. And then you think afterwards, goodness, they've just not spoken to each other for three generations. No one in this family, they're all mute. What's going on? We need dialogue in your book. So head on over to the Society for Introducing Dialogue to Your Book.gov, and they'll help you to just introduce some character conversations.
If it isn't clear for you listeners, I think Dean is tar is address addressing specifically the South American of writers. So I'm very sad, Dean. You're teasing. You like the Hispanic literature, Alexandra. Yes, he likes Spanish, but you're, I don't know, Dean. You know, we don't agree on I love South American literature. You haven't had such great experiences yet, have you?
No,
not your favorite.
Most of the ones I've read, they lack dialogue. But anyway, look, PJ, it's not my fault. These companies get in touch. They want to sponsor us. They're paying us the big bucks. Most of it goes to Alfred. You know,
yeah,
it's. It well,
when am I
getting
something myself? I mean, Alfred's living the high life. I think Alfred can write a book about his.
Yeah, adventure. And I don't know if you can see PJ on the webcam. He's not even here. Like, he's sitting out back chilling. He gets all the money. I don't know.
I think so. Yeah, indeed.
Well, PJ, why don't you tell us something that you've read this month?
So, and this month I've kept it non-fictional. Okay, so you, of course, you all know that I love my Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu. I think it's now officially become the most reviewed little book in the whole podcast, because I mention every month. No, not every month, but I actually do meditate on it every month, but I don't mention every month. I hope not. But anyway, so the Tao Te Ching, I just want to briefly mention this verse of the Tao Te Ching, because it will lead direct to the book that I'm still reading at the moment. So, verse 5 of the Tao Te Ching, I read it very slowly. As you remember, 2 months ago was verse 4. So I'm meditating the last 2 months, 2 verses. But okay, here it is, verse 5. It's useful emptiness. It's by my favorite translator, Ursula Le Guin, the fantasy writer.
Of course.
She also translated it. And she calls the chapter useful emptiness. I don't think it has names, the chapter in the original Chinese.
Okay.
But here it is. Heaven and earth aren't humane. To them, the 10,000 things are straw dogs. Wise souls aren't humane. To them, the 100 families are straw dogs. Heaven and earth act as a bellows. Empty yet structured, it moves inexhaustibly giving. So, as I explained, the Tao Te Ching is a 2,500-year-old book by Lao Tzu, just explaining kind of like guidances through life. Now, Confucius was a student of Lao Tzu, but Confucius was very dictatory, telling people what to do. Lao Tzu is kind of telling the opposite. He's being very vague. It's completely vague, very hard to translate.
Hold on there, PJ. I do like that. So you've talked about this a couple of times, but you've never mentioned before, or maybe I just forgot, that Confucius was a student.
Indeed, Confucius supposedly went to visit Lao Tzu and described him as a dragon, meaning dragon is always a metaphor for a complete mystery of a man. Because Lao Tzu was someone who kind of escaped society, well, he just decided to leave, take a step back from society. And Confucius, as far as I know, was more involved. So he went to study from this man and went back to society. So Confucianism is actually very sort of, it's kind of more about like rules set up to like live your life good. But the original Taoism, it turned into some kind of religion. But the original Taoism was non-religious. It's just simply trying to slow down life, and it's usually taking a step back from society.
Okay.
And I like this verse because for me, it's the fourth verse was about abundance for me, but this verse is about like almost the necessity of evil, which is always something what we discussed in right in the,
yeah,
in our philosophy courses
back in the
so
back
like
in the
idea
day.
Is back in the days, right, as students, Queen's University Belfast, shout out. One theory is that evil is there because we're supposed to have free will, right? Because if evil weren't there, if God made everything good, then we would be forced to be good. We wouldn't have the decision to not be good.
Yeah.
And for me, the Taoist approach is it's never really about a kind of a God or anything like that, really, in my opinion. Like not like a human kind of God, but it's just saying that heaven and earth aren't humane. It isn't kind. It isn't this Christian idea that something is kind or something is evil. It's just heaven and earth behave like straw dogs. So for me, it's kind of like, it's an odd metaphor, but for me, it's a bit like, I always imagine this verse like wild dogs barking. So okay. What's out there, it's never like good or bad. It's just wild dogs barking. It's not like the idea of kind dogs, sweet chihuahuas, that's all kind of Hollywood, isn't very real.
Mm-hmm.
So this for me is a bit about kind of finding comfort in the fact that it's not evil, but it's not good either. It's just the way it is. So if it seems cruel to you, if it seems like dogs are barking at you, well, those are just dogs, you know. It's not that they're there to attack us later, but there's not their net. There's nothing is good. Well, like wise souls aren't humane to them, to 100 families or straw dogs. It's a bit like saying if you're really kind of above the feeling of like, well, I'm going to prioritize my family or nepotism. If you're above that, then everyone is equally as important and equally as unimportant to you. You treat everyone the same.
Yeah.
So I like the idea. It's hard maybe to come to that, but I like the idea that we maybe also put less importance in things that we know or things or people we know, but also put maybe more importance to the complete strangers. So anyway, that's my little quote. Any thoughts about that, Dean? Any disagreements about
Yeah, okay, we could, but look, we could do an entire podcast on that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could talk about this. We could, I don't know, you could revive Can't Stream for a one-off episode, and we could talk about the necessity of evil, you know, and I could say that I don't think that if you have any kind of compulsion, then I don't think you're performing a moral action at all. And I could say that even a light compulsion would do that. So even having rules to follow with some kind of societal pressure and norm to follow them and a punishment if you don't follow them, well, then you're not really doing a good thing by following them, you know. And we could go on. We could ad infinitum about that, you know.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. So I think that quote is a bit about that. Lao Tzu always goes out of rules. He doesn't talk about rules. So it's always just about, like, the things are just the way the things are. So maybe stop demonizing or stop you know, angelicizing things. So I like the idea very much. It's very kind of realistic, I find, as well, even though it's supposed to be meditations. So which leads me to my next book. This is an interesting one. I think you'd be surprised I read this. It's a book called My Way, The Way of the White Clouds. Here it is. I'll show you.
Okay. This, My Way.
I'm living in a meditation center right now, for those listeners who don't know. In a lovely room at the top of the attic in Dresden. And this was recommended to me. It's by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. Sorry if my Indian pronunciation is not very good. But he's more famous as Osho. So this is what became famous for. You probably heard of him as well, right, Dean? So
I can't say that I have, to be honest, no.
Right, so Osho is a controversial figure, I suppose, because he has changed also throughout his philosophical career, a bit like Wittgenstein. So he just changed, and he changed his name to Osho. So this is his early phase where he just was known as Rajneesh. And Osho is basically hard to follow. I suppose some people would call him a guru, but I prefer just the word philosopher.
Yeah,
and but he's also being controversial because he has, in his later career, mixed a rich lifestyle with meditation. So some people thought it was contradictory that he was kind of like this person who studied Taoism or the original Taoism, and then he went around in limousines. But anyway, I personally don't have anything against it. I think fair enough. You know, he seemed to have enjoyed life, but kind of want to get away with that, away from his biography, because I'm more interested in this book, My Way of the Clouds, which is basically interesting. It's basically advising you to live your life as a cloud. So a bit surreal, like that. But what he's going for is very much like Lao Tzu, and I like this. If I can give you a mini quote.
Mm-hmm.
The whole of existence is like a white cloud. Without any roots, without any causality, as a mystery. A white cloud really has no way of its own. It drifts. It has nowhere to reach, no destination, no destiny to be fulfilled. You cannot frustrate a white cloud because wherever it reaches is the goal. So I find this very interesting. He also says then if you have a goal, you're bound to get frustrated. The more goal-orientated the mind is, the more anguish, anxiety, and frustration there will be. Because once you have a goal, you are moving with a fixed destination. So anti-cloud-wise. And I find the idea interesting. He's basically just saying, stop having an ambition and just completely try to be in the present and try to go literally with the flow. So the idea of like going with the flow. But he's not using the river metaphor. He's using the cloud metaphor because the idea is that it's not water going along shores, it's that you're a cloud and you change shape, you change directions. You don't follow a particular river path. You completely are nothing and then something and then back to nothing again. So I find it interesting, the book. Just want to show you the pages. It's a beautifully, if you can see it a bit, it's beautifully well made because there are photos in the book as well. And the print is on the photos. So it's really like full of pictures of clouds. And I think that's great. Like this one is amazing. So it's just clouds and then it's written on it. And it reads like the Tao Te Ching. It's kind of not easy to read fast. It just gives you thought about, it just gives you thought like, you know, because we're very goal-oriented, I find, the Western society. And I think this positive and cons, but he grew up in India. So he's using a very Eastern approach of actually forgetting your dreams and like kind of like the more dream, the more you're out of reality, is kind of advising. So it's just an interesting approach to take to just see yourself as a cloud. And he also advises us for mental health, for example, just letting go of the mind, that we're maybe too much in the mind, he's saying. So like really letting it go and just drifting like a cloud.
Like a cloud. Yeah. Okay. I get it. Nice.
Yeah. It's a nice metaphor. It's a very comforting book, I find, as well. So just call it The Way of the White Clouds, a reference directly to Tao Te Ching, because Tao Te Ching is basically the path, the enlightened path. So the way. So he's saying The Way of the White Clouds. I have to say this about Rajneesh. He's two things. He's a great communicator and teacher, but I don't think his ideas are necessarily new. He's very influenced. He's a scholar for me, really. He just modernizes the concept of, for example, the Tao Te Ching and makes it more accessible for people, which I think is very necessary. But I don't think it's necessary that it's not necessarily that he's come up with many new ideas. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Fair. But it seems interesting. Like, seems interesting.
Yeah, I recommend it. It's very good. Yeah. So I think it's good to have people like that who just modernize the ideas, because for me this is the Tao Te Ching with different metaphors. So I like that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, at this juncture, I suppose I would just quickly say hello to everyone listening on Radio Oxen, all our friends at the TNC network also.
And hello again, there.
Hello there. And booksboys.com is the place where you can find links to all the things. Should really update that site at some point. But anyway,
I thought you were going for a classic retro look, kind of. You know,
I mean, it does look very cool. Yes, very classic, very retro.
Very cool.
But we were mentioning earlier our Patreon, patreon.com/booksboys, and I'm also going to real quick play this little thing.
The facts that will be presented are true.
Yes, PJ.
Hello there!
Dean, as always, joined by Mireia. Say hello!
Hello!
Dark Place Robert and Playboy Alex.
Doing all right, glad to be here again.
So I've given you those nicknames. I'm not a fan of that one. Well, that's where people will know you from.
Nobody's
that's why
gonna know me from that one, but let's carry on anyway.
Hello there! Can you hear me?
Join us for Shakespeare written, Spanish plays and poetry, rock star interviews, film reviews, Dark Place Dreamers, and more. Patreon.com/booksboys. There we go. Guys, go and get all of our shows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Plus the t-shirt and various other bits and pieces. So go and do that. Well,
do you do that?
What else have we got? Shall I tell you what else I read next, PJ?
You've been a big reader this month. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, so we remember that I did La Regenta. Now, we had a lot of complaints about this. A group of people, the Association for Fans of La Regenta, they emailed to say, you read a 900-page book and you only spend like 5 minutes talking about it. And then I checked how many people were in this association, and it was zero. It was zero. So
I was just about to say, it must have been maybe one dimension person. Yeah. There's zero. There's no one called it. A cloud called you, basically.
Yeah. But I wanted to give another person.
Oh, what? But I haven't met one person who likes Clarín. So, to be fair,
you've met one, PJ, because I'm now a fan.
Indeed, you are. Are you really a fan of a shorter works, at least? They must be better, though.
Yes, they are a lot better. Really? I said that my only problem with La Regenta was that it was so flipping long.
Going for the Anna Karenina method.
Yeah, it was. It was. And, you know, these 900-page books, you notice the trick about them. They've also got bigger pages and smaller writing. So your average 400-page paperback is like 100 of these 900 pages, you know. So these are super long, and La Regenta was endless, you know. And I've read this, Una Novela y Ocho Cuentos, so a short novel and some 8 stories. This is Leopoldo Alas, Clarín, obviously the nom de plume. And this is a series of stories. Now, I don't know what's the cutoff for a novella, because these are all about the same length. The novella is only about 10 or 20 pages longer than the short stories. So I don't know how many pages are required to become a novella and not a short story. Maybe it's 50 or 60, but these are all in and around 30 to 60 pages. And I'm not going to talk about them all, and I'm not going to a great amount of detail about them or anything like that, but I did really, really like them. Let's talk a little bit, and again, not in any great detail, but just quickly a little idea of what some of these are about. Adios Cordera is one that I was excited for because it's supposed to be somewhat dystopian. And then I read it, it's 10, 20 pages, it's very short, so it doesn't really have time to build anything. But it's about missing someone who's left, essentially. Is it
dystopian?
I mean, I guess in the sense of just like the sadness of someone leaving, but not really. It's not Orwell, you know.
Okay.
So actually, it was the one I thought I was going to like the most, and I have no notes on it. I didn't care about it at all.
Okay, good.
And El Diablo in Semana Santa, which was another one that was quite famous because it has the characters from La Regenta. It's the little 10-page short story at the end of La Regenta. Again, wasn't really interested in it. The devil appears during Holy Week, during Easter, in the church. Okay, cool. What can you do with 10 pages?
That's not good. Yeah. But I do like the concept. I do like the devil in literature. So, I mean, it's always... But it didn't work out. What a pity.
Yeah, it didn't.
I would have thought that's a sure shot. You know what I mean? Incorporating the devil into literature. Like Faust, you know what I mean?
I just didn't find it that interesting. Cambio de Luz, Change of Light. Again, I didn't really care about. But let's look at the ones I did like. Okay. So, Doña Berta. Doña Berta is quite good. It's some of these get almost Dickensian or almost Balzacian, Flaubert kind of style in a way that I did not see in the longer work. So I like some of these, and maybe you'll see as I talk about them. Doña Berta is this lady that we see sort of slowly going a little bit crazy, and she's friends with this painter, and she keeps talking about how beautiful the painting is. But it's her captain, and she's this idea that she had a captain that she was her son. And then she kind of starts to go a bit confused about whether or not the person in the painting is her real son, and then people aren't sure if she even had a son. And she almost thinks the painting is her actual son, and she goes to look at it every day and all this kind of stuff. So
that's interesting. Okay.
It was interesting. And it's the headline one in this book. It's the novella, but I thought it was average. The rest of these short stories that I'm going to talk about are the ones that I really enjoyed. Okay, so the first one is Avecilla. This is about a family going to the theater to see the is it the Zarzuela? So they're going to the theater, and the dad's kind of slovenly, and he has to get the daughter and the mum to like help him get dressed and get his tie done up, and he doesn't know how to put the tie on and all this kind of stuff. But they go out to the theater, and this is a societal tale on morality within the family, and how there's like a social, how the things that you do kind of impact on your family standing morally and all this kind of stuff. So it's right out of the playbook of Flaubert and Balzac and all of that, you know.
And don't forget, like, for our listeners, Clarín was Pérez Galdós, one of the two main representatives of Spanish realism in literature. So he's obviously talking a lot about society and classes. And
yeah. And they talk about qué cosas había visto la niña. So like what things that the girl has seen, because they think that their little girl has seen too much. And they think that it's broken her innocence. And then they're sad because they say, we are her parents, and actually we are the people who have let her see this stuff. Right, and they talk about she has lost her innocence that night. And I got really confused, and I'm thinking, did they, like, prostitute her out or something? Like, what are they talking about? But no, it's actually not like that. It's just that they think that taking her to these theatrical shows is so crazy and immoral that they've, like, exposed her to, like, this underworld almost, you know?
Right, okay, yeah.
And their sadness is actually based on the kind of moral decadence of the society, you know?
Oh, yeah, okay. Fair enough, yeah.
So anyway, there's a little bit of humor.
Big theme in realism, though, to be fair, and in naturalism, because he's writing quite late in the 19th century. Yeah, but the humor is obviously very typical of Balzac.
And yeah.
Gandalf, yeah.
Right. Then we have Pippa. And this one's sad. There's a little boy that, no, I think he's an orphan boy, if I remember correctly, almost out of the Dickens playbook, but no one really seems to care much about him. He's trying to be friends with this little girl, and her mum's playing with her, and they're doing like cow. It's quite endearing. The little girl, they want sweets, and they want the mum to pretend to be a cow, and there's just extended scenes of the mum's going around going moo, and it's actually quite a nice and endearing to read parts of this one.
Yeah.
But then they kind of don't care about this poor boy, Pippa, and there's a, at one point he gets drunk and they say, oh, he's dead. No, he's not dead. He's just drunk. You know, it's kids in this one. He's had alcohol. So they just kind of leave him in a chest. And then the house burns down and they just leave him.
Okay.
And afterwards they say, who is it that died? Oh, nobody. Just Pippa.
Oh, no. It's very sad.
It's really sad. They don't care, you know?
But that's the difference, clear difference, everyone, for literature students between realism and naturalism. Naturalism is without humor, and you're depicting death, the underworld, and poor people in naturalism, whereas realism tries to depict all classes, and so it might be about the kings as well. So I just want to show you, Dean, that's the clear difference.
Okay.
So that's a naturalist, though.
Mm-hmm. Then we have El Cura de Vericueto. So cura is a priest, I guess, some kind of religious man anyway. This one's not super good, but it's just about this kind of priest who's interested in philosophy.
Okay.
So he just kind of goes around talking about, you know, different types of philosophy and wanting to engage in discussions, you know, about all the different kind of philosophical stuff that we would have learned about in school and uni. And it's quite interesting, but not a lot really happens in that one to like excite me. I just thought it was nice to see the priest, you know, going around talking about all that stuff. The only real thing that happens is he gets into debt, and he kind of thinks that they'll go easy on him because he's a priest, but they don't. And the guy is really cruel and kind of is willing to destroy him. And at the very end, he finally gets some money and then dies.
Again, naturalism. Yeah, there you go.
And one that I really like, this one's very powerful. It's the last one I'm going to talk about. Los Dos Cajas, the two boxes.
Okay.
It's about can't actually remember off the top of my head if it was a violin or a cello. But anyway, it's a classical musician, right? I think he's playing a violin. Let's say it's a violin. And he used to be good, you know, he used to put on shows, but he's kind of a bit washed up now. And there's a bit of like, oh, you're not good anymore. You know, you're a one trick pony or whatever, you know, and he's doing some shows and he's getting a bad reputation, but his wife's his biggest fan and she always goes to see him anyway, this kind of stuff, you know. And eventually they split up and it's sad and they have a little boy. But what are the two? All I need to say to make this powerful and to make people want to read it, what are the two boxes? Well, there are two boxes that he buries. And one is the body of his dead son. And the second is the violin that has a breakdown and buries them together, you know. So
wow, that's a powerful metaphor.
Yeah, that was my favorite, just for the like the shock, not the shock, but the feeling, you know.
I love that concept. That's a really powerful. From all the stories, that one really impressed me.
That's why I saved it for last. You see, it's almost as if I knew how to host a show. Well, then I went online, actually, and I read one little bonus one, because I discovered that he had one not in the book called Socrates Rooster. And there's not a lot to say about this one. Just two sentences, really. But it's about what happens with Crito after Socrates. You know, remember, Socrates says we owe a rooster to Crito or whatever. So this is just, he goes to get the rooster and pay the debt. And the rooster talks to him and says, he meant it metaphorically. He didn't mean it real. And then he argues with the rooster, and then he kills the rooster anyway. So,
well, that's a fun one.
So just a little bonus one, you know. It was nice. Humor.
A little fun fact about Clarín. Supposedly, he was a really terrible, unintelligible writer. So no one could understand his writings. And both Pérez Galdós and the other naturalist author from Galicia, Alexandra, if you're listening, Emilia Pardo Bazán, have both commented, and it's publicly recorded, like making fun of Clarín's writing. Pérez Galdós very amusingly wrote that it's always a pleasure receiving letters from you, because it feels like it's a guess game. So I'm always trying to guess what you wrote down. I just find it amusing. They can be a writer and be completely unintelligible. Fun fact as well, Karl Marx, no one could read Karl Marx except his three daughters.
Right.
So the three daughters had to write down Das Kapital. That's a huge work, and they had to write it because no one else could understand Marx's writing.
Wow.
So, you know, so just a little fun fact.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
That's right there.